This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Jeff Van Gundy, who's nice enough to join us now on the Michael K. Show. Jeff, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How are you doing today?
Doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing great. I wonder how much blame goes to a coach and how much blame goes to a player, Jeff. So we've had a lot of phone calls today. Doc Rivers' fault. How could he let the team collapse that way? I also say, you know, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard have to hit a shot in the fourth quarter. How do you see it?
Well, I think as a coach, you have to bear the responsibility for your team's play. And so I don't blame Doc Rivers. Because so many things are out of your control as a head coach, shot making being the most important one to ultimate success. But we all know when we sign up for this that you do bear the responsibility for the results. And so blame, no, very little. Responsibility, absolutely. And I think it's a huge difference. It can't just be a players' league when you win. It's always a players' league. Your roster determines your success. They have a tremendous roster that did not perform well in those last three games of the playoffs.
From where you were sitting, Jeff, what exactly do you think went wrong specifically?
Well, I think specifically the Jokic passing led to direct baskets. That hurt him greatly. I think they lost spirit when they struggled to make shots. You know, whenever your two best players both shoot the ball so miserably, you're going to really struggle. And they didn't really have a third guy. All year they've had Harrell and Lou Williams to bail them out. Neither guy had a particularly good series. Lou Williams missed point-blank layups last night. He made very makeable shots. So in one evening, they really didn't have offensive answers. And in this high-scoring league, they scored 89 points. Now, Denver only had 104. So it wasn't like their defense was a total calamity. Offensively, though, I thought their spirit level dropped, their determination, their resilience, whatever you might say it. I thought they were mentally weak in the second half last night.
Now, when you look at a game like that, Jeff, is that something that the powers that be with the Clippers have to just reimagine this team? Or does it have to be broken up and built back up, or does it have to be tweaked?
Well, I think that's always the difficult question. When you look at them this year, they did a lot of resting of their players and slowly rehabbing their players. And then they had a lot of guys in the bubble, leave the bubble, and miss time for varying reasons. And they never then had what they thought was the chemistry to win when they were in a struggle. I think, you know, you are what your habits are by the time you get into these high-pressure games. And to me, their level of maturity when it came to handling rough spots in a game was lacking, particularly in these last three games. And, you know, it's they could have still advanced. You know, in game five, they could have won. You know, they put themselves in position to be up big in game six. And so even with these warts that every team has, they could have still won the series. Now, I think going forward, they have to ask themselves, you know, who we can afford, first of all, and what we need to try to supplement that, and then use their – they don't have any first-round picks to trade. So they're boxed in a little bit. It'll be interesting to see what they can accomplish.
Yeah, I said that earlier, Jeff. I mean, they really mortgaged their future for those moves. I mean, they just gave it all up, and if it doesn't work out, it'll be catastrophic in a basketball sense for them because it's going to be hard to build back up because you gave up your draft picks and all your collateral.
Yeah, but I also admire a team that decides to go for it.
I do too, but you better get it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That is, and guess what? There's four or five other teams who are pursuing that similar path, right? Mm-hmm. Milwaukee's in that path right now. They're going for it. I would expect them to do some, you know, try to do some big things to supplement their roster around Giannis. And so it is hard. We all know it's really difficult to be the one team that wins it all. But when you build your roster like they were able to do and you sacrifice so much to do that, you're going to be held to a high, high standard. And unfortunately for the Clippers and their fan base, they were unable to get to at least where everyone expected them to get, which is to the Western Conference Finals. I think if they had lost in a tough, you know, 6-7 game Western Conference Finals to the Lakers, it would be one where you could say, yeah, they just, you know, LeBron's great, right? Anthony Davis is great. But to lose in the second round to a Clipper team that's better than most think, but not does not have the same roster as the Clippers, I think is going to be ultimately what's so disappointing.
Now, sorry, Don. You go ahead, Don.
Thank you.
I overstepped.
When you are an executive having to make decisions, how much does the pandemic play into it? Because even though, hey, all bets are off, everybody's going through it, it's still very unusual. Like, so do you look at things differently and say, well, yeah, this was really disappointing, but look at what we had to go through, pandemic, stuck in a bubble, all the things that went into that. How much do you factor into making a decision as opposed to in normal circumstances?
I do think it has to be a huge factor. Now, you're right. Everybody went through it. But when you think back, all you brought from the previous season that stopped in March was your record and your roster. So many things changed after that 4.5 month break, right? And availability of players. Some teams had people sick, some people didn't. Some people had tragedies that maybe would have cost them a game or two, but in this setup where they had to leave quarantine when they get back, it cost them more. And so I do think you really have to weigh that in the totality of the whole season. And it's hard to do because there was such a huge gap between when they ended in March and when they picked it back up. And now going forward, the season is also going to be, you don't know what next season is going to be like. You might start in a bubble again. And then you ask yourself, are we going to be any more mentally strong in the bubble next year than we were this year? And unless you're with that type of team every day or any team, you really don't know what you have. And I think it's critical that they really sit and study what they have and what they think they need to add and what they can add. And those things sometimes are very different. And I think not overreacting and yet not underreacting, that fine line is so hard to straddle.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Back to the game last night, but on the other side, the Nuggets. Obviously, Jokic and Murray are something special. And yesterday, you said on the broadcast that Joker's the best passing big man you've ever seen. And I wanted to know how long you felt that way and who else you put in that conversation.
Well, there are so many great big men passers throughout the history of the game, from Wilt, Kareem, Bill Walton, Arvydas Sabonis, Vlade Divac, and so many more, right? So it's not like it's easy to say, but I think in today's game, the difference between what all of those great passers did and what Jokic does is predominantly those guys I mentioned pass from the low post and the elbow, and they were stationary when they passed. Mm-hmm. You now have this 7-footer last night rebound and lead the break in the middle, passing on the move. You had this 7-footer come down off a pin down like a guard would, catch, curl, drive, and pass with his opposite hand to a cutter. And so I think the ability, or what separates him, is his ability to pass off the move and off the dribble. Frankly, the skill level that he has as far as seeing the play, a play ahead, it's truly astonishing when you're watching.
Now, in finishing up, so Michael, Don, and Peter, I mean, we're three jabronis, so when we're blown away by Bam Adebayo's block, what do we know? But you've been there, done that. This is your life. Did that block take your breath away? I mean, was it as big a deal as we're making it out to be?
You can make the case it's bigger. Jimmy Butler got totally blown by. So he had no resistance. This was a direct line blow-by to the rim, right? This wasn't a guy coming at an angle because the guy guarding him did a good job in sort of redirecting him off a direct line path. So Butler gets blown by, and Adebayo comes over there. And when you watch the replay, how far his hand got bent back.
It's unbelievable.
Because, Tatum, like, made a tremendous move, went up with tremendous speed and force. Nothing soft about what he did. He just got met at the mountaintop, and the mountain won. And, you know, Adebayo's play right there, it is every bit or every superlative that it has drawn from you and others, it's well earned. A game-saving play when I frankly, it's hard not to foul on that. It's hard not to give up three-point plays. It was a magnificent, magnificent play by an ever-improving young player.
And I know you have a great deal of respect for this man anyway, but, I mean, when you look at the different incarnations of the Heat, I mean, Pat Riley is one of the greatest basketball minds that has ever lived. I mean, would you agree? Because it's different teams that he puts together and just builds them up, and there's not that long period of being down. Does he impress you as much as he impresses me?
Oh, well, what he's accomplished here is terrific. But I think what gets lost in, as we always praise Coach Riley for it, and he deserves credit, we undervalue what Eric Spoelstra has meant
right
to that organization. You know, so the team that they have, you know, people don't realize, or very few realize, last year they were a sub-500 team. They won 39 games. The previous 5 years before that, after James left and, you know, Bosch had the heart ailment and Wade left briefly to go to Chicago and then Cleveland. In those 5 years, they were a +8. That's it. They were an average to a little bit above average team. And then they made some critical errors, guys they signed that were not typical Heat players. And when they were able to get off of their contracts, they went right back to finding Heat-type players. And you see how quickly they rebuilt. He did the same thing when he initially went there. He got Alonzo Mourning. And then, you know, they drafted Dwayne Wade. They, you know, got Shaquille O'Neal in a trade. You know, they've been able to do really good things. And that doesn't mean they haven't had down years. When Coach Riley was the coach here, they won 15 games 1 year. They won 25 games 1 year. They won 36 games 1 year. But they were always able to rebuild their roster so that they had hope and they had belief. And that is something that he has been down there. He's been, and this is hard to do, he's been a better executive than he even was as a coach. That's hard to do.
Now, one final thing. I'm just curious. You know, you guys are down there for so long. Do you and like Mike Breen, you play backgammon and you know, in your pajamas, you play gin rummy. How do you pass the time?
I would say that there's a lot of time spent alone contemplating life, and you can come up with some pretty strange answers after being in the same hotel room for like 60 days in a row. But Mike, as you know, Michael, he loves golf. So Mark Jackson, our statistician Dave Fried, and I are now playing golf. And Today, for nine holes, I shot par, 72.
Wow.
In nine holes. No, nine holes.
That's fine. That's fine. That's 144. Yeah. You would have been good.
Yeah, and that, like the alligators know when I step up to a hole. They're petrified. They're protecting their families because my ball is a water-seeking missile. So we've played some golf. You know, we've done a lot of games, and you know, but there's just very limited things to do here. And you know, you have to be careful. You know, even though we're in a bubble sort of thing here, it's not like the player bubble. You know, everybody's trying to be real careful about, you know, keeping everyone else healthy. So it's a bit boring, but, you know, we're down to less than a month now, and can't wait to get home.
Tiny little basketball nerdy thing I wanted to ask you about. Not to put over my guy, Jason Tatum, just because I love him, but were you also impressed by the fact that Tatum managed to get that shot off at the end of the game with 2 seconds left after falling to the ground, picking up the ball, not traveling, and getting an actual shot at the basket?
Yeah, listen, Jason Tatum to me has improved so much in 1 year. I can't tell you, he's taking much better shots. His defense has improved. His rebounding has continued to get better. But what has made him even a better offensive player is his passing. He continues to improve in every facet.
Good stuff. Get through these days and the weeks. You guys are doing a great job. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
You got it. Take care.
Don't miss the Michael Kay Show. Weekdays at 3 on 98.7 ESPN.